Om Agyanatimi Randhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Srishtam Manamapi Shatiputra Matra Sarupam Rupam Tasya Gajamurupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurum tam natosmi. Vandeham shri guru shiatah parikamalam shri gurun vaishnavangscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunatan vitam tam sajivam sadvaitam savadhutam parijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. What I'm going to speak is going to be in relationship to our meetings that we're having here about the projects that we are developing in pursuance of Srila Prabhupada's desire for ideal communities, living simply on the land without all the modern conveniences of modern life, which means also being free from the modern inconveniences. The most prominent of the modern inconveniences is life without Krishna in the center. So, Krishna-centered life with cow protection, living simply, all these things. In Puri, I spoke on this. We had meetings there also regarding the ongoing development of these projects. One of the points I made in Puri is that even though we want to live simply, we can't ignore that there's the whole big world around us which is committed to living a very different mode of life. And even though we may say everyone should live like this, there are others who are opposed to this and who would, if they had the opportunity by force, stop what we want to do. For instance, if we take to what we're proposing, simple living, high thinking, and others may think we don't like this and we'll take this over by force. And if they have the opportunity, they may use tanks and Kalashnikovs and all this kind of thing. So we're saying that we want people should live a more simple life, grow your own food, chant Hare Krishna, protect the cows. But practically in the modern situation, we have to take shelter of, ultimately we take shelter of Krishna, but in what we might call the immediate sense, there are going to have to be people who support this, but who are ready to defend it also with modern technology, which means that the modern society, unless we can convince everyone, which definitely in the immediate context is not very likely, the modern society, we're going to have to give credence to that, and so they're going to have to be nuclear kshatriyas, as was written in that book, Varnashram Manifesto, which doesn't seem much like a kshatriya. While the U.S. Army was still in had a strong presence in Iraq, there would be some, there were people based in Las Vegas, in Nevada, in USA, who they'd go to work in the morning. Their work is they'd sit in front of a computer and see the targets in Iraq and send the missiles to destroy them. Not exactly a Kshatriya, but that's warfare in the modern age. So we can't be completely oblivious to this. That's one thing we have to bear in mind. Damodar Prabhu suggested we could train up, we could revive the art of Vedic Dhanurveda with Brahmastras. Yeah, let's see. Even in that time, it seems it wasn't a common thing, because Arjuna had the knowledge, Ashwatthama had it half. He knew how to send a Brahmastra. It's not that everyone had this knowledge. It was not that every Kshatriya had this knowledge of Brahmastras. That's a very high level, it seems, of Dhanurveda, although they had knowledge of what we would nowadays call mystical, different kind of technology altogether by sound, by mantra. They can invoke so many powers. People in the modern age, they don't have the shakti that comes from tapasya. So we might not be able to do that. We may say, well, Harinam is more powerful than tapasya, but the kind of power that Krishna wants to give us from chanting his holy names is, we don't hear that by chanting the Harinam you'll get knowledge of such weapons, for instance. Yomam eva sammudho janati purushottamam sasarvavid bhajati mam sarvabhavena bharata. That doesn't mean that if you're convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, that you'll get all the detailed knowledge will just come to you automatically of Ayurveda and Dhanurveda and all this. So that was one point. Social factors in spreading religion. If we see the spread of religion, now of course Srila Prabhupada often said Krishna consciousness is not a religion in the sense that it's in the sense that people generally tend to think of it. Historians of religion, they will see that there are certain factors which lead to the rising, how certain religions become prominent. How could Buddhism become popular in India? Because one factor is that many people were fed up of the priestly caste, the monopoly on religion of that the Brahmanas had. And it seemed they didn't care about the spiritual uplift of others. Whereas with Buddhism, anyone from any background can become, you don't have to be a Brahmana. They reject the caste system. So he made spirituality available to everyone. So it's a social factor. There are social factors by which people take to different teachings. Just like Srila Prabhupada, he preached Krishna consciousness in America from the mid-1960s, which was just the perfect time, because there were so many young people who were disillusioned with the modern way of life and looking for spiritual solutions or spiritual direction. So it was the perfect time for Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, it seems that he, in the beginning, he wanted to, his idea was to go among the more educated people and the more, what you might call, respectable people. But he didn't get the kind of response that he got from the hippies. So he went with the hippies. So there are factors. We're talking about this Varnashram development. And one factor that Srila Prabhupada emphasized in establishing farm communities where people could take to Krishna consciousness is that your needs will be taken care of. That for most people, their spiritual quest is not as important in their minds as their immediate material needs of those of themselves and their families. Or even if it is very important, they still have to think about their immediate material needs. Roti, kapra, makan, as it's summarized. Food, clothing, and shelter. So, for most people, discussion of the spiritual world and becoming detached from this material world, that's all very nice, but they have to think immediately, where's the bread coming from? How am I going to feed my children? So Srila Prabhupada often said that if we make some arrangement whereby people, then material needs are taken care of, by their cooperating in this community, then they'll be happy to take to Krishna consciousness. And from what I understand, Srila Prabhupada's idea of his farm communities was not that everyone is going to be immediately Krishna conscious. Srila Prabhupada said that millions will join. It's not necessarily that they have to chant 16 rounds and follow four eggs immediately to join. The beginning, the core must be there, but if people can come and do some service and they can join the kirtan and they can, and their material, if they're prepared to work, then they can get their material needs taken care of. And some, definitely, principles have to be followed. So there are social factors, and religions tend to spread well and stick if they have a solid material basis, as we were just discussing, that Judaism, the Jews, they all look, they're a community, and they stick together, they help each other. They're money oriented. Not that every Jew's after money, but definitely it's considered in their whole social setup. The Mormons is a fast-growing religion for many years in America. So they when you become a Mormon, you're committed to their whole way of life, but in to their teachings. But in return, they have a network by which they'll see that you get a job. And so you invest in them, not just philosophically I was raised in the Roman Catholic religion, and there's no community as such. You just go to, in terms of looking after you in a material way. Just you go to church and you're a Catholic, and you go to church every Sunday, and then when you get married in the church, and when someone dies, you go to the church. But getting a job, looking after your family, that's nothing to do with them. But those religions which are growing, they take in all these factors. In the modern age, money. if we say work is worship, that if you're working, and that in itself is worship, people like to hear this kind of thing. Or if we say that your career is your devotional service, people like to hear this kind of thing. It's not necessarily not true that it's not your devotional service, but it has to be understood that if you're doing it really for the sake of serving Krishna, then it's on the lead. What is that? That Janak is given the example of karma yoga. Actually, he's a pure devotee, but he's doing it to show an example for others. But if we say that, well, everyone, if you're doing a job and you're chanting Hare Krishna, then you have an aspiration to be a big success and a Kraupati and all this kind of thing, and it's just the same as being a pure devotee. People like that kind of thing. It's actually cheating, because it's not actually the actual philosophy is anyabhilashita shunyam. We should be free of all material desires. But if we can cast Krishna consciousness in a way in which people can fulfill their material desires and they think it's pure devotional service, then that will be very popular, as we're seeing. Many people take to... But that's a kind of cheating, though. So we have to make it very clear that, all right, if you want to make money, you can, but you should understand that's not in and of itself a pure desire. If you have material desires, we're not saying that everyone has to give up their material desires immediately. But at the same time, you should understand a material desire is an impediment to devotional service. Srila Prabhupada, he often asked when he met government leaders, you help, you cooperate with us. In Chicago, he met some leaders of the local administration, and he said, you have a big building there, you give it to us and give us facility. You have a crime problem, we will help to stop your crime problem by training people to lead a pure life. So he was asking for the cooperation of the leaders. He said, in India, if the leaders would cooperate with him, he said, I'm doing so much, but if the leaders would cooperate with me, we could do so much more. So, although ultimately we depend on Krishna, if there's money, if there's state support, we can do so many things. We see that massive Christian conversion is going on in India, money-powered. It's not that people have a spiritual experience, but it's money-powered. They feel it's better for them materially if they become a Muslim. Then you'll get all these facilities in Kuwait and all these places. The Hindus are working there, and their colleagues will say, here, you convert, and then convert to Islam, and we'll give you all these facilities. It's going on. So, we can spread Krishna consciousness widely by making some compromises also. If we say that, yeah, you'll be ambitious, it's good, make lots of money, it's good for preaching. It's good for preaching, but it's good for preaching in the sense that many people may be attracted to that. But it's not good for spreading the actual message of the truth. The truth is that as long as we have material desires, then we cannot progress. We cannot or rather that our progress is measured by bhakti parishano bhava virakti ranyatra. Often we like to stress, yes, Krishna consciousness is experience of Krishna, and but there's the other side also, that we were detached from everything else in this world. So these Varnashram communities, they're for demonstrating that we don't, material ambition is not required in devotional service. One can live as a householder and be materially non-ambitious, and your needs will be taken care of. That we don't need to work in this society. People say, well, if we don't get a degree and we don't get a job, how will we live? But we want to demonstrate that you don't have to be a materialist. People think that, how can you live in the world unless you have to be out there and competing and making money and working hard. We want to show that that's not required, and no need to be materialistic. Rely on Krishna. That doesn't mean you don't work, but work for our needs. If we do make compromises, then maybe we can spread very widely. But we don't want to do that. We don't want to cheat. Then we'll get just some wishy-washy so-called Krishna conscious, which won't really help anyone very much. At least the point of becoming pure devotees, it won't happen if we're promoting that, cultivating the desire for having lots of money, being a success in this world, that's also okay. If we're promoting that, then people aren't going to have the change of consciousness by which they surrender to Krishna. Then we have to come down to the platform of materialistic religion, in which people are making money and they think, well, to be religious means you have to feed the poor and have hospitals and all this kind of thing. Then you just become part of materialistic society, and we're seeing that practically in our society that. What we are teaching is something which is what in English is called otherworldly. I mean, we're teaching about the spiritual world. This otherworldly, it's a term which is used in a pejorative sense. They've got no contact with this world. They're just living in a dream world. But it's not a dream world. This is the actual world. The real world is not one of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, getting born again, dying again. Reality is that we are eternal. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to give something practical. And his practical program was this, for the mass of people. Live simply on the land. This is how God, Bhagavan, has made the program where we live on the land, everything will be given. You don't need factories, you don't need slaughterhouses, you don't need brothels, you don't need all these things. So religions can be successful when they adjust, when they become materialistic. As Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, all the great teachers in the history of the world, what we call religious teachers, Jesus and Buddha and maybe some exception is there. I haven't studied so much about Muhammad, and people say different things about him. You get very different pictures about who you hear from about. But he said they all taught that the real world is not this world. They all taught going back to Godhead. But their religions definitely Christianity spread widely when it was practically deliberately compromised with materialism. Buddhism in China was able to flourish when they, because it's a very otherworldly kind of religion. It's a religion of renunciation. But it was able to be spread widely in China when they adapted it to the whole Chinese idea of respect the emperor, family is very important, and all these kind of things. So by making compromises, they were able to spread widely. Now, the Vedic worldview is able to encompass everything. It's understood that some people are materialists. Here we go, yoga ladder and all this kind of, that although Krishna says Vedavadarata Partha Nanyadastitiva, he speaks against those who perform or karma just for the sake of going to the heavenly planets. But then that's at the end of the second chapter. Then in the beginning of the third chapter, he talks about doing yajnas by which the demigods will be satisfied and all your material needs will be fulfilled. So the Vedic worldview encompasses everything. That at some level one should follow the Vedic process so that one can become, even if one is thinking of one's material needs, one should rely on Krishna, the process that he gives. But ultimately one should be, understand everything in this world is temporary. We have to go back to Godhead. But we have to keep a philosophical compass fixed, that we want to accommodate or bring people into Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, we have to keep it very clear that this is the Back to Godhead movement. People can come, live with us, chant Hare Krishna. We don't expect everyone to become immediately very renounced, but we have to keep it clear that dharmasya hi apavargyasya nartho taya upakalpate, that religion is not meant simply for living in this world happily, because ultimately there is no such thing anyway. But we're meant to be focused on going back home, back to Godhead. That we can accommodate worldly people, but not very materialistic. I mean, when I'm saying worldly, I mean they have a need for food, clothing, and shelter. We can accommodate that. Yes, come, that will be provided by Krishna's grace. But not rampant materialism, that we have to get big houses, big cars, lots of money, all this kind of thing. Some basic needs can be taken care of, but we don't want to promote gross materialism of this idea of becoming a great success. It's illusory. So basic needs should be taken care of. But at the same time, we can focus our attention on going back to Godhead. And this is practically, we're seeing that even in our beginning Varnashram communities, that devotees are coming with their families, and definitely there are needs to be fulfilled. And they are being fulfilled in a very simple way. And we can expand that. They wouldn't stay if we told them, you just come here and chant Hare Krishna, but you bring money so that you can live also. We're not going to provide you. And then people can't come. If we say that, you come and stay with us and we'll chant Hare Krishna and but you have to maintain yourself. And how can they come? So both things are there, maintenance and Krishna consciousness and family life. It's all one package. But the ultimate aim is, we have to make that very clear, going back to Godhead. It's Srila Prabhupada's social program, his social program is not feeding school children so they can get a good degree and get a good job. That's not his program. His social program is live as Krishna teaches us to live. So we see that already. I mean, definitely our householders who are there, they want to know if their needs can be taken care of. And if they are, then they're ready to come. They're devotees. They're ready to come and chant Hare Krishna. Definitely they have material needs, but that can be taken care of by the simple process of Krishi Goraksha. Even while accommodating worldly people, I'm not talking about our devotees at our farms now, but more and more people may come, and they may have more interest in how their worldly needs may be fulfilled, and especially we can expect that if there is some severe economic crisis or food crisis, which can come at any time. It's been predicted for this year that the monsoon rains will be low. So food prices are going to go up. It doesn't matter who's going to form the government. But if there's a poor monsoon, then food difficulty. It's already difficult for so many people. It's going to become more difficult. So people may be attracted to live with us. We say, come and live with us, work with us. And we can provide food. So that may be their first interest, but then we have to give other conditions also. That if you're with us, you have to rise early, you have to chant Hare Krishna. We're not going to give you meat. So for them, the pious people may like to come and join with us, but their first outlook, they want to see if their material needs are taken care of. But we can bring in people like that. As Srila Prabhupada said, people will join us in their millions. But at the same time, we have to keep it very clear that the goal of life is Krishna consciousness, and to be simply interested in our material needs, that's not our goal. That's a lower level of thinking. So that should be clear. In our communities, we are accepting what, from the perspective of most people, is a low standard of living. Voluntary poverty. Living without electricity is a great challenge. So all these women came immediately, they turn on the fan. They just, I don't think they thought about it. It's just when you come in a room, it's hot, turn on the fan. Whereas we came in and we probably, none of you even thought about it. Especially those of you who are living without electricity. For those of you who are coming from Avanti Ashram, here is very cool. It's much hotter there. You get used to it. You get used to living without that. So we're accepting what to people who live in the cities might see as poverty and austerity. You're deliberately accepting that. But we actually prefer to live like that. because it's more conducive for Krishna consciousness. If you're going to have air, if you're going to have fans, then next thing you're going to want air conditioners, and then where's the money? There's the story of that's Upakhyane Upadesh, one of the disciple who was told by his guru, you just study Bhagavad Gita. So he went off to a cave and studied Bhagavad Gita. But then sometimes he had to go outside to the village to bake some food. And he found that when he went away, the mouse was eating his Bhagavad Gita. So he got a cat. So then there was no more mouse problem. And then the cat, there weren't enough mice for him to eat, so the cat needed some milk. So then he got a cow. He begged a cow in the village. But then the cow was so much took him so much time, he didn't have to look after the cow. He didn't have time to read Bhagavad Gita. So he only got a wife. So the wife can look after the cow. And the wife said, okay, but I don't want to live in this cave. You have to go to get a job. So he went into the city, and then he was a successful businessman. One day his guru came to visit him, and he's living in a big house with lots of children. And he said, I told you to read Bhagavad Gita. He said, yeah, it's all just so I can read Bhagavad Gita. See, there was this mouse, and I got a cat, and then I got a cow, and then I got a wife, and now I'm doing business, and I do read Bhagavad Gita sometimes. So we want to avoid getting caught in this, that we're deliberately living simply, living in what might seem to be to people to be poverty, but understanding that this is real wealth. And when the economic crunch hits, then as Srila Prabhupada said, you can't eat nuts and bolts. You can't eat computer chips, to put it in more modern context. You can't eat rubber tires. Srila Prabhupada saw this. Even everyone in India thought this is progress. And now, after independence, we're founding factories. There's a rubber tire factory in Faridabad that was one of the first major factories in India. So Srila Prabhupada would go up and down between Vrindavan and Delhi on the train. And there's a rubber tire factory. So everyone, almost everyone in India would be thinking, this is progress, this is wonderful. But Srila Prabhupada saw this is spoiling people's culture. And so we deliberately want to live simply, understanding that the real wealth is the opportunity to live with devotees and chant Hare Krishna, and the land that is wealth. And that we can live very well from the land. The description is there of the Vrajvasis that have so much butter and yogurt that in play they would throw yogurt and butter on each other. Just a sport. What were they doing with so much butter and yogurt? They'd throw it on each other on festivals. And they'd have enough clothing, everything. So they were living very opulently. So we, at the moment, it seems like a lot of poverty, but actually we should be able to live very opulently. A little land can produce so much food. So real opulence. Getting back to that first point about we're relying on political powers to protect us. We take that for granted that we could do this. We can't do this kind of project. We couldn't think of doing it, for instance, just say about 200 kilometers to the west of here in Pakistan. Maybe we could do it in an Islamic community. I don't know if they'd even like that there. I don't know why. But we couldn't do it. It wouldn't be appreciated in Pakistan. So we have to consider also that we're making these projects, but it may be necessary for us also to keep contact with politicians and important people. Otherwise, there can be hostile takeovers also. It may come even within India. They may say that, the land can be taken away by force for making industrial projects. They may say that this is going against the progress. This kind of preaching is going against the progress of the nation. You have to teach according to our curriculum. So we're making these projects, but we have to preach outside also about why we're doing this. And as it starts to expand, which we wanted to do, we can expect there'll be opposition. This kind of opposition will be there, that people will say, how you're misleading people. We want to develop the nation. You make from within our own ISKCON society, there may be opposition also. Definitely when we want to introduce, which we have to do, is the varnas, then there'll be opposition. We're going to have to preach this a million times and still people won't get it. That this is not the caste system. As you know, it is non-exploitive, non-envious. The society has to be divided. That is for the benefit of people. It's not meant for exploitation. We have to show that also. We also have to be careful, apart from outside takeovers, we see that there can be inside takeovers also. That people who are not within our movement, people who are not, they don't understand the principle, or they have some other idea, or they may be materialistic. They can take over projects and spoil them. They may have a different idea. They may think that, well, all right, so far we did it with we're living simply, but we could be much more successful if we used tractors and or maybe just someone from the love of power may want to take over, so that we have to be very careful. Establishing big temples means someone may want to take it over, or they may get the position of managing it, which is good opportunity for them to become rich or have the prestige of being a big religious leader. So, remaining poor helps to keep out such people. If there's lots of opulence, that will attract the wrong kind of people. So opulence means we have enough food, we have enough clothes, but we should be very careful, because once, if there's very good economic condition, then someone will want to appropriate it for their own sense gratification. I'm just speaking some general ideas now, but generally wherever there's something's going on well and someone wants to take it, and I can show a better way to do it, and they'll take it over and just spoil everything. So that we have to be very careful that people who come in and join these communities, they have to understand also that why are we doing this? For the sake of, to please Srila Prabhupada, for the sake of spiritual advancement, even though material needs, we're seeing to that. Then gradually we want to have all kinds of things like handicrafts and all kinds of things, weaving and cow products and all this kind of thing. So business, some kind of business will be there also. It's definitely in all traditional societies, some kind of business is there, because not everything is produced locally. Just like, for instance, if you have brass pots, it's not in every village there's going to be a mine for bringing out the metal. And so some things will be brought from outside, and different spice, not that all spices you can grow in all places. So definitely there's going to be some outside trade for which you have to produce, and some kind of business will be there. But we have to be careful that when many people are together, that we don't get someone who's just interested in being in charge for the sake of being in charge, so that they can dominate others. Purity has to be preserved. And for that, varnashram is required. Brahmanas who are detached from the world, they should be listened to. We can't expect everyone to be very detached, although we are asking people to live in these communities at a standard which is much, according to their modern way of thinking, is very austere. So we have no objection if they're working the land and producing the vaishyas, and they can have jewelry if they can produce. They can have jewelry and nice clothes, and we have no objection to that. But at the same time, we have to keep everything focused. Brahminical culture, Srila Prabhupada spoke of. And he also spoke about how at the present time, the world is dominated by Vaishyas and Shudras. Definitely the whole world situation is dominated by, it's not a secret, it's dominated by multinational corporations. Governments work as agents of the multinational corporations. You can't get in power unless you acquiesce with their ideas. And if somehow or other you do, then they'll throw you out. Grace of the CIA or whatever. So, Brahminical culture. Brahmins, we need real Brahmins who people will respect, not just because they say, oh, I'm a Brahmin, but by their detachment, their knowledge, their actual spiritual advancement. And also because they're able to help and give good practical guidance to people also. It's not that they're just sitting in some corner talking about Vedanta Sutra and they have no contact with the world, but very practical also. They're gurus to everyone. So those are just a few points I wanted to make as a follow-on to the points that I made in Puri. That's all. Relevant to our meetings. Okay, we can break up for now. And Hare Krishna.